Good, thank you, Irene. Thank you for inviting us all. I'm delighted that we're having this new session of the International Seminar on Cursive Scripts. And as you'll see, there's much in common between Irene's introduction and a few of the questions I shall be asking, based on different examples. And I hope this all goes towards an interesting conversation, interesting discussion with the audience. I will start with questions about what we mean by elementary scripts and unskilled scribes, because definitions are important. I mean, cursive scripts, we've been discussing cursive scripts for 10 years. I'm still not quite sure what cursive means. the terms we're discussing today also deserve an effort on our part to try and define them. It is true that this topic we're dealing with today is slightly different from what we've done before on cursive scripts, which has been especially about highly skilled scribes, highly skilled document scribes mainly, not only professional writers of documents and sometimes books. But this seminar is also about the complexity of writing as a social system encompassing all kinds and all grades of writing, their coexistence, their combinations, their interaction. Which was a way, well, when we started this seminar, it was a way of reintroducing cursive scripts in the general landscape of medieval handwriting. This arose from a discussion at one of our CIPL conferences, where once again some of us thought there was a lot of talk about books and not much about documents. So we thought we might start our own thing, discuss documents and cursive scripts. And so it's been going on now for, a decade. Nice. So unskilled writers and elementary scripts are another aspect of the general landscape that is often overlooked. So how important can they be in the general history of writing? Why should paleographers be interested? They offer not only evidence of the interesting degenerative processes that are always part of handwriting through neglect or, in this case, ignorance, but also examples of how formal writing can be born out of formalizing processes, so out of lower grade, more common forms of handwriting re-elaborated once they have become common enough, re-elaborated into more formal and higher grade kinds of writing. The word unskilled might most obviously mean non-professional writers, and as Irene has said, writers learning to write. As you know, learning to write is distinct from learning to read. There are different processes, different stages in learning. Learning to write for your own practical needs is also not the same as learning to write in a professional capacity, which we tend to forget because we go to school and learn one writing for all. None of us are professional scribes anymore, we just type. But not so long ago, people who went into administration or to jobs for the in public service were often recruited based on their handwriting. There's an interesting example in the famous book by István Hajnal on learning to write at medieval universities in the 13th century. He mentions a student at a college who's going to be thrown out because he's not a very good student. But he's given one more year at this college so that in the meantime he can learn to write, which at first seems strange, and Hajnal seems to think he's going to write because he doesn't know how to write. I rather think he knows how to write well enough to take notes during classes and for his own practical needs, but he's going to get a professional training as a writer. We also know that in monasteries, the more stupid monks are often trained to write books, or those who weren't strong enough to till the fields. So it was a way of getting a job for someone who was not good for anything else. The recording or sharing information is also, recording or sharing information in writing is also obviously part of many professions, which might use writing professionally in that sense without being professional scribes. Word elementary brings to mind, obviously, at first elementary instruction, so writing for beginners, meaning low-quality writing from beginners, but also potentially specific scripts used to teach beginners. Not to go back to that eventually. So how should we define elementary? Is it only a question of competence, low quality, or can we find enough writers using the same kind of scripts at any given moment? Can we find evidence that there are common traits, that there are shared features between elementary hands in different places that might be evidence of specific kinds of scripts used for beginners? We'll see some examples from the later Middle Ages in particular. The elementary might also refer to the elements of writing, basic strokes that make up letter forms. Elementary writing might be simplified structures, stripped of decoration, stripped of elements of style, possibly writing broken up into its constituent elements, constituent strokes. The concept, as Irene mentioned, there's an important concept here coined by Petrucci in 1979 in the Festschrift for Giulio Battelli, which is the Scrittura Elementare di Base, which in his opinion, at least in some periods, yes, was a concept that should be applied to certain kinds of script typical of elementary schooling before you would instruct your students in more sophisticated scripts. Unskilled writing might be associated with non-professional and with elementary scripts, but not only. Skill is, I think, a relative notion. Many professional scribes specialize, for instance, in books or in documents, and might be less comfortable when crossing over. So it is also important to ask ourselves which kinds of scripts might be predominant in any given period, might influence scribes when they're doing something else which they're not necessarily very good at. For instance, complex cursive chancery scripts were replaced in the 9th century and thereafter by simplified book scripts, basically Caroline Minuscule, and cursive writing as a skill progressively became lost in some places earlier than others. It went on for a longer time in Italy, as we know. But in Gaul, for instance, you find documents moving from cursive scripts to more, let's say, elementary Carolingian minuscule. But also, in some instances, scribes trying to emulate what they think should be a proper diplomatic hand, but they can't do it anymore. So they tend to deform their own basic Caroline minuscule into something that is pseudo-Merovingian, as in this mid-10th century charter, in which you have two interesting subscriptions, one by the Archbishop of Besançon, which is up here. They're both called Gifredus, by the way. So this is one sort of rendering of a pseudo-Merovingian or Carolingian diplomatic script. And this one's particularly interesting, I think. This is actually the scribe of the charter. So you see his moderately competent Caroline minuscule here and the way he tries to recreate a proper diplomatic hand in his own subscription. This is part of the trend that ended, that went on to produce what we know as diplomatic minuscule, which is essentially an elementary Caroline script with decorative ascenders and descenders, extensions of other sorts, and all these crisscross lines used as decoration, all these zigzags, so that have nothing left in common with the proper Merovingian and Carolingian tradition these people were thinking of. I believe we can say they were thinking of that, because in some instances the imitation is better. I mean, even in the later 10th century or around the year 1000, we find people actually probably going back into their archive and copying Carolingian scripts in a more archaeological manner, you know, with true Carolingian traits in the writing, including ligatures, which you don't have here. Ligatures, decorative ligatures, and extended strokes have been replaced by just the basic script with additional decoration. It's the same, you know, you see more or less the same in the Roman chancery. When the Roman chancery drops the traditional writing that was used by the popes until the 11th century, they, in the mid-11th century, they go on to a northern Transalpine kind of diplomatic minuscule. And then when they revert to their traditional writing, you can see they don't know how to do it anymore. You get a sort of mix of both kinds. And so, in the late medieval and early modern periods, professionals, writing masters, defined their art as mastering all kinds of scripts. And here you have the example of someone who is not unskilled, a highly skilled writing master. This is the famous example advertising the skills of the Johann von Hagen with all the different kinds of scripts, both book scripts and cursive scripts, he could teach you. And so he is equal competence in all kinds of writing here. Different writers, it should be stressed, also could use different writing materials. Making durable documents and books on parchment is essentially for the professional writer. The expansion of non-professional writing with a pen might be correlated to the rise of paper, both in terms of what we have preserved, but also maybe historically. Considering most non-permanent writing, or yes, probably most non-permanent writing, was done on wax tablets before the invention of paper. The invention of paper, I think, might have meant that more non-professional writers also put hand to pen, pen to paper, whereas earlier they would have used other writing materials. And writing on paper, of course, requires different skills from writing on wax. So before that, if we go back all the way to Roman times, these are just a few examples of writers that are non-professional, but that I would not necessarily call unskilled. They are skilled in practical writing. And so you all know these scripts on hard materials done in scratching, not with pen and ink. These ceramics, first century ceramics, wax tablets from Pompeii. Everyone knows that one from Schiffens. Where you can see what I meant earlier on about saying elementary scripts might be defined as scripts broken down into basic elements. No decoration. Features of style or no features of style could be discussed here. There is some style here, but no features deliberately added as features of style. So these are maybe uncalligraphic, but far from unskilled. And the technical aspects of writing on wax, I think, are quite obvious when you compare this tablet from Pompeii with a 14th century Italian tablet. You can see how much there is in common and how far script tends to break down into elementary strokes when writing on that kind of material. So how often did non-professional writers put pen to papyrus in antiquity or then to parchment? How well could they do it if they were not really used to it? How long would they have spent learning to write on wax or learning to write on other materials with pen and ink? There are a few instances of writing on parchment where I think it is quite obvious that the writer is someone who is more used to writing on wax tablets. You can see the same kind of writing transposed from wax tablets to parchment. This is one famous example. It's the will of King Philip Augustus, the first royal will in France, which looks quite incredibly informal for a royal will. And this is because it was done by a non-professional scribe, by Frère Guérin, Brother Guérin, who was actually head of the royal chancery. So someone who had to do with writing every day, who was not a professional scribe himself. He employed professional scribes. And in the chancery registers, you can see his hand next to professional scribes. The difference is quite striking. And no one who was not the boss would have been allowed to write in a hand like that in the royal registers. Other examples, well, this is quite different from, say, this famous autograph by Francis of Assisi, which is basically an elementary Caroline minuscule, but does not, I think, have the same traits as the one we just saw. It does not look like the writing of someone who is used to writing a lot in wax. This is slower and less deliberate than what we've just seen. Other instances, this one is parallel to one shown by Irene, someone who is far from illiterate, but is not a professional scribe. This is Jean de Joinville, the biographer of Louis, Saint Louis. It's a professional scribe writing the body of the charter here, and then you just get these two autograph lines at the end, which are quite typical of these non-professional hands, especially in the way the minions are built. You know, unconnected minions, just done with sort of hooks hooked onto one another. And he's also quite old by then. He's almost 70, so it might account for some irregularity in the writing, but the script itself is typical, I think, of a non-professional script. In other cases, you have people who are probably quite professional working in chanceries, but with using kinds of different kinds of scripts when writing the proper document that's to go out in its solemn form, and then internal notes in very different hands. I'm not saying these are the same people or they have the same level of competence, but you can find very informal and elementary looking hands in these chancery contests. This is a document from the papal chancery from 1280, Nicholas III. This is the front of the document, and this is the back. This was actually washed off. It wasn't supposed to be seen, but someone noticed it, and then using special photography brought this out. And this is, it looks both extremely clumsy, but also very fast and cursive, which probably means that someone is also used to writing a lot, but not as as a professional scribe. I don't think this person would be allowed to write in front of the document. Other examples, yes, these late medieval examples. There are a number of hands in which we find very similar features in the 15th and first half of the 16th century. I mean these sprawling hands. You have a professional scribe, a secretary writing the letter here, and then the postscriptum and the subscription by the author, who's an early 16th century French nobleman. This kind of large sprawling hand, which might have connections between minims, but is often unconnected between letters, unless they start writing really fast, is also, I think, typical of what I believe, was an elementary schooling script at that time. And you find the same kind of script used by princes and used by peasants. Because, of course, you should remember that princes, noblemen, take pride in not writing too well, or they're not interested in writing as well as a professional scribe. They would find it probably somewhat humiliating. The one we just saw is early 16th century. This one's 1531. And this is by a yeoman just writing down a contract for farming. You have the professional hand of the notary down here, just adding the date, but he just went to the notary with the thing he drafted himself. And this, I think, is exactly the same kind of writing, but in a very fast execution, very cursive. So once again, someone who has elementary schooling but uses writing probably very often. This kind of script tends to disappear in the mid-16th century, replaced in large part by elementary italic hands, such as this early 17th italic hand, which is specifically advertised as lettre facile à imiter, easy script for women. Lettre facile à imiter pour les femmes. There are also similar kinds of writing propre pour gentilhomme. So it's not just a gendered question. I mean, it's out of the question that it is considered that women need simpler kinds of handwriting, but so do gentlemen. They're not professional scribes. And so this simplified italic is used as an elementary script as opposed to the more sophisticated cursive Gothic scripts that would be taught to French professionals going to work in law courts with notaries and so on. So what impact do these scripts have on the system as a whole? Irene mentioned Petrucci's theory. I don't know if he would still agree with it now, 30 years later, but it was a very interesting theory that Caroline Minuscule might be the result, might be the generalization of a very basic school script defined by unconnected letters, one form for one letter, no ligatures, and so on. There have been similar theories on the birth of other kinds of scripts like La Mercantesca, but I think Irene has shown that it's not really what happened. Yeah. So it is quite sure that unskilled writing has been underestimated in the history of handwriting, essentially because it's scarcely preserved. We mostly have names or a few words in subscriptions, graffiti. Sometimes, by chance, we get a whole royal will or something like the writing of St. Francis preserved because it's a relic. We get dorsal notes and pen trials and so on. So I would now like to look at a different kind of evidence, the one that was promised by the title of my paper. Because since this is the first paper, I thought I might broaden the scope. But I'm actually quite interested in what epigraphy has to tell us about these elementary scripts and unskilled writers. Epigraphy, I mean, that's another chance for survivors, writing on walls. So both graffiti, but also commissioned inscriptions by more or less competent stone cutters rather than scribes. Walls and stone and other hard materials have preserved many traces of unskilled writing. So graffiti have attracted much interest in recent years or decades. There's been work on the graffiti of Pompeii, of the Palatine Hill. There's a new society in Switzerland called Ductus, which focuses on what they call minor epigraphy, meaning mainly graffiti. There's been the work of Carlo Tedeschi, which we will hear here. But there's still been very little in paragraphical terms. It's mainly about content most of the time, as is usually the case in epigraphy. And many corpora still need to be published and investigated. I'm thinking of places like the Papal Palace at Avignon, which is actually full of medieval graffiti by all sorts of people. And there's one place I've just become interested in recently, which is the castle of Celle, well, what's left of it, which is now entirely underground. A few corridors and towers, lower rooms in towers of the castle of Celle, which is in Cambrai, which contains hundreds of medieval and post-medieval, well, including post-medieval, it goes up to thousands of graffiti of all kinds. This place was a castle, it was a fortress, it was also a prison. So you have graffiti by prisoners, by the wardens, by guards of the castle and so on, of different kinds. So graffiti and inscriptions, as I've started saying, are two different things. Well, graffiti and more formal inscriptions. In both cases, you have the adaptation of writing to resistant surfaces, which may be technically difficult for a skilled writer, and conversely, a stone cutter would be good at cutting stone, but might not be very confident with his letter forms. So the issues are quite different. A skilled stone cutter will often actually be illiterate. And if untrained in the epigraphical tradition, he might improvise ways of adapting the script of his model from one medium, which might be wax tablets, might be writing on parchment, but in a book script, in a document script, to the medium of stone, even striving to render informal or cursive letter forms in a more formal way. And so here you have someone experimenting in the formalizing of letter forms. At the same time, inscriptions will often lose the essential features of style that are associated with writing with penned ink. And so you will get skeleton book scripts, letter forms based on a formal book scripts, but with no thick and thin net, just skeleton letter forms. So just a couple of cases here from this site. In this case, you have I think we should call this a graffiti, very similar to what you would find on a wax tablet in the early 14th century, but also might be seen as a basic document script transposed into a different medium. This is another one with a script that's more clearly based on a batard, so a formal cursive book scripts, but here again in skeletonized letter forms. Looking at other periods, as many of you know, in Roman inscriptions you often find letter forms that are typical of elementary, sort of archaic cursive scripts. Specifically, special letter forms like this cursive E, done as two vertical downstrokes. This is an inscription that's almost a graffiti, I mean, in quality. It's probably a commissioned inscription, but very low quality. The same goes for this one. So this one's 2nd century. So it's this one. In this case, you have normal E's but cursive F's. You have featured here with a cursive F. In some cases, you might even find reasonably formal inscriptions, including the same kind of letter forms. In this case, for instance, you have Publius Argentarius, etc. And then the name of the person that's being honoured here, Decetia, is the only word in the inscription written with that kind of cursive E, but formalized as a proper inscriptional letter form with small serifs and so on, which makes it something different. One aspect I'm particularly interested in, and that will be my last category, is the incompetent reinvention of formal letter forms based on pen-written letter forms by illiterate or almost illiterate workmen. These inscriptions might be, they offer great difficulty. They might be difficult to read. They're often difficult to date, as Irene showed us. They might be difficult to authenticate. I've often been asked about jewelry and stuff with inscriptions. You know, do you think this is original or not? It's often difficult to say. So just a few examples of scribes, the work of scribes being put into hard materials by stonecutters who don't always know what they're doing with letter forms, or who are influenced by common writing and trying to give it a more formal aspect in their inscriptions. This is a famous inscription illustrated by Jean Malon, specifically interesting for the cursive B and cursive R here, alongside more, slightly more formal letter forms in the rest of the text, first century. This is a very interesting one in Naples. It's a column with information about landed property. And it's a very strange mix of Roman and Greek letter forms, but done pretty competently by a pretty good stonecutter, but with very strange letter forms based, I think it's quite obvious, on cursive letter forms. I don't know if you can see it, it's large enough, but you can see these this N, for instance, N or U, and you don't quite know where you are, if it's Latin or Greek, with a long downstroke to begin with, then a shorter, thick second part of the letter. In other cases, you have A here, which is also halfway between a cursive A and a more formal A. I don't know if I can make this larger. Whoops. Let's see if you'll be able to zoom in. Further cases, lots of them in the in late antiquity. This is a 4th century inscription in Santa Maria Trastevere in Rome, where you can see, once again, formal letter forms invented out of cursive letter forms, with this cursive A turned to something formal by just adding serifs on the end of the strokes. And other letters here, R's and S's getting mixed up, parentes, boseson, boseron. These are probably phonetic problems rather than graphic. It's probably pazentes for parentes and boseson for boserent. Further examples from probably 10th or 11th century inscriptions in the Pyrenees, which were recently discovered, and the local historian tried to read them as Aramaic and started writing articles about Jewish communities in the Pyrenees in the Middle Ages. It's actually just a very crude Caroline minuscule saying Benedictus Presbyter, and then you need to turn the stone upside down to get the second part of the text, and Isarnus Fecit. The letter forms here, you see, are very much simplified, very geometric, especially the things like the N going up like this and then like a Greek pi. Another one just nearby in another chapel, very difficult to read. Difficult to read, difficult to date. Probably Salmon with a cursive, sort of more or less Visigothic kind of A. Salmon, this might be an ampersand, Salmon et Martinus. With a strange ligature here between a lowercase a and a capital R. This one was published in the Corpus of French Inscriptions, which normally stops at the date 1300. I think this is clearly later than 1300, but you need to find which elements you might use for dating here. Among other things, I think this is clearly at least a 14th century Gothic magistrate A. These very strange S's here, hic sunt reliqui, etc. I'm almost done. Are probably based on, I don't have an illustration here. These cursive S's you find in charters in the late 13th, early 14th century with S's done like multiple snakes intertwined here, or like a sort of wedding cake. They can go up like 15 levels. And so this is probably later than 1300. It's really difficult to date. Then you also get ligatures in this one. You have sort of cursive treatment of majuscules here. You have a cursive majuscule R linked, connected to a more bookish kind of Gothic majuscule E, mixed with minuscules here, all kinds. In some cases, I must say I'm at a loss either to read or to date anything like this, which is on the Cathedral of Pisa. This, well, it might be 12th, 13th century, but I have no idea what it means. I don't know if everyone has ever read it. This is a very nice one from the Swiss Alps, which I think is an interesting example of someone trying to analyse and formalise letter forms that he probably can't read. He's just trying to make sense of them geometrically. And so forms that are, for instance, open, accidentally open, because they were written quickly, he opens up completely and thinks that is the proper letter form. So this is not really easy to read either. I think it says 1485, ego, probably presbyter. P, the P is completely open, but the P is open. Titulus, S, probably B abbreviation, presbyter. Johannes, you get a connection here between these very geometric looking letter forms. HS, abbreviation. This is probably Ricci. R, an R, which you find in cursive writing, where the shoulder of the R becomes detached from the minim. Ricci, C is quite geometric, quite round. De Pon, this is probably for Pontresina, which is the name of the place. Not quite sure what's going on here. The PO abbreviation, maybe a TR ligature with an abbreviation or something. Feci, something must have disappeared here. Facere, this is a ligature, so a very archaic kind of ligature between the first part of the A connected with the F and the second part going here. Facere, this would be an R-E ligature. In onore, we find the same kind of very geometric N we had in the Pyrenees in the 10th or 11th century. Onore, you find the same R again. See, this is the clue to that one. R is one stroke and one dot. Onore, sancti, and this is probably spiritus. Same structure as here, but P done in three strokes. And getting the proportions wrong gives you something that's completely different from the original letter. This last one has been baffling me for years. It's a tabernacle in the Meuse department, cut in metal by a completely illiterate artisan. This, I think, clearly enough says Ave Maria. There's one minion missing here. You can make out the abbreviation. This, I have no idea what it means. I've tried. I have 15 different hypotheses, and none really works. It's just strokes. Some of them recognizable, others not. Then just these two last pictures with stonecutters that are far from incompetent. It's just an illustration of the way in which letter forms that come from current handwriting can be formalized in epigraphic handwriting, in epigraphic writing, lettering. This is a 16th century inscription for a 14th century Topo Cino de Pistoia. I just wanted to point out the QUE abbreviation here. This is quite common in inscriptions, but I wanted you to compare this with this extraordinary rendering of the same thing in the cloister of Santa Maria della Pace in Rome, Canonicisque Regularibus. So the medieval inscription that at first looked like a semicolon, then more like a Z, actually becomes a form of capital Z in this case. So here we're far from unskilled scribes or elementary writing, but you see the ways in which, once again, cursive letter forms not only represent the degeneration of more formal scripts, but can also serve as models when going uphill again, formalizing common traits for higher grade writing. Yeah, thank you.